May the presence of God continue to bless this service. May the Holy Spirit have free course among us, is my desire and prayer tonight. Before I begin, I wanted to tell something that happened at our house today. My wife said this morning that someone showed up at the door and had a flower arrangement of some kind and left it there. And she has had that happen a time or two already. And she looked at a little card that must have been stuck in there and said something about the congregation at Strawberry. So if any of you know about that incident, we just say thank you, especially from my wife, but also from me. That is so very, very kind of you, and God bless you for that. I confess that my heart is heavy tonight, telling a story like I just told. But there's something else that's on my mind tonight, and I want to just... I'm quite sure the way I feel right now, it's not going to be easy for me to preach this. But I felt for a period of time that God has this for our message tonight. This evening there is a burden on my heart because of some observations I have made in my short life. There seems to be an unreined emotion within many people that brings with it an untold cost. And the problems that it makes can go on for years and years if nothing is done about it. Tonight there are many sitting in prison because they could not control themselves and did things that can never be undone. Once the bullet flies, once the machete swings and the result is a murderer, it cannot be undone. Throughout the ages, wars have been fought, both with weapons and with words, and many have gone into eternity at odds with their fellow men and out of contact with God. Tonight, there are many sad people lamenting the fact that because of the unreined emotion of anger, they have lost so much. They have lost their children. They've lost their marriage. They've lost their work. They've lost their opportunities to succeed. Possibly they have lost their church connections. And worst of all, they've lost their relationship with God. Why? Because of anger. If this problem only existed in society, that would be one thing. But all too many times, anger has brought disastrous and horrific results in marriages, homes, and churches, and ruined dear relationships among the people of God, and way too often in conservative Mennonite churches. This evening, I will tell a story. I'll tell more than one. When I was 16 years old, I'd been a Christian for a while. I was a church member. I was a Christian about 2.5 years at this point in my life. I had a younger brother that was helping me on a project one day. And he had this thing that whenever he would get just a little bit excited about something, he would laugh to the point that he couldn't really work. He would just get into a giddy mood. And one day I was not in a giddy mood. I was not foolish. I was serious about getting something done and getting it done now. And we were lifting wooden cattle racks onto a Toyota pickup truck. A small Toyota. It was a 1973 model with a long bed on it. We had wooden racks that fit in there. And we had these racks partway on. And he was helping me put this thing on, and he thought this was more of a joke than I did. And I, in a moment of anger, when he was trying to perch himself up there and lift these racks on, I figured this fellow's not going to help me any. I just went and pushed him off. And he sprawled out in the ground and cracked his wrist. It was hurting. It started to swell. I realized in a moment or two what had happened. And I remember him going in, my mom getting some ice out. I don't know where my dad come up with money to pay for that. I don't know where it came from. All I know is I remember seeing that fella lying there on the couch and realizing, Virgil, you stupid fella, you. You broke your brother's wrist just because you were angry at him. And what are you going to do about it? Nothing. Can't do a thing. Can't correct the problem. Has anything like that ever happened to you? I recall from years ago a scene where a young fellow was taking care of some broilers in a broiler barn, and it was of very great importance to the family that as many broilers went to the slaughterhouse as possible. And I remember one morning that young man walked through the barn and there was piles of dead birds. And I remember seeing him sitting on top of a five-gallon bucket of dead broilers. And there was dead broilers all around him. And I remember seeing a dad go out there and he was yelling at that fella for all he was doing wrong. He was just going on and going on and going on. And I remember seeing that fella's mom go out there and telling dad, please, be quiet. Don't talk so loud that the neighbors can hear you. Please quit it. I'm going to tell you something. That father would give tens of thousands of dollars today to have that son in the faith. He would do anything possible to reverse. Because that incident right there was one of many. One of many. I was working in a shop one day, and I heard in the shop the dad just, blah, 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 blah. I heard another brother of his just, blah, 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 blah. It was just goings on and scolding this boy, and I remember seeing him walking out and wiping his eyes. Didn't know what to do. Didn't know what to do. Another brother of that same fella says that he remembers time after time, mom and dad just spatting at each other and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And he remembers going to his bedroom and just slamming the door, pinning himself in the bedroom. And I don't need to tell you, my friends, inside that bedroom, stuff would go on that should never go on. Somebody trying to shake off this disastrous home situation. I've seen that boy that I saw that day walking out of the shop. He's in my presence, cried and bawled about problems in his own life. And it's not going well with him. He's a friend. He's a dear friend. It's not going well with him. Whenever those children got to a certain age, most of them were at least church-going people, but they do not want to be in the church where their dad's a member. Have you ever seen or heard anything like that in your short lives? The subject that is on my heart tonight is, what does anger cost? What does anger cost? James chapter 1, verse 19 and 20. James chapter 1, verse 19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. So now we're going to look at some meanings. What does anger cost? Cost. What is cost? Cost is the price. How much is paid for something? The value of. So what is the cost? How much does anger cost? If you're going to get your checkbook out and write a cost of anger, what's the digit amount? Is there a way to calculate it? If you were to calculate the magnitude of what anger has cost some people, I mean, you might think it humorous whenever you have seen a mechanic like I did one time. I was working, he had a roll around tool chest, and something, he banged his head or something went wrong, pinched a finger or something. He just kicked that toolbox and wrenches flying all over the floor, and I'm sure he had a boogered up toe somewhere. And we might laugh about that, but what did your anger cost? Or doesn't it cost anything? Does anger cost anything? Anger. What's anger? An emotion. Feeling of strong displeasure against anyone or anything that has wronged or hurt us. Anything that has hurt us or anyone that has hurt us. And did you ever see somebody take their foot and kick somebody because they were angry at them? Did you ever see or feel somebody smack you so hard across the face that you went flat on the ground? Has that ever happened to you? Do you know what that kind of thing is like? It has happened, and worse. If you ever need to discipline a child, and you've seen someone or done it yourself in an angry way, it does more harm than good many times. The child might come into subjection, but they might not be so cozy with you after the fact. Indignation, intense anger mixed with scorn caused by something mean. Wrath, great anger or indignation accompanied by a desire to punish. Sometimes like flying into a rage, and you never have no control, no idea what's going to happen. I'm telling you, my friends, anger sometimes in this thing of wrath, and we just read the verse, the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God, and it means exactly what it says. I've seen people get tense and build up and build up, and suddenly, like as it were, the relief valve of an air compressor, blah, 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 and just tear into somebody, and you might see them a little while later wiping tears or just feeling real sullen and just like this. But that fella, he goes on his merry way, never need to apologize for nothing, because he said his piece. He did what he felt like he had to do. He scolded him good and proper. But does anyone ever think about the damage that is done by angry words? Have you ever thought about it? And somehow, some people have this uncanny ability to be fussing and yelling and whatever at the family, and walk through the doors of a church building, and maybe the suit coat's on, buttoned up, and everything looks so nice. But be not deceived. God is not mocked. If you're an angry man, plain clothes doesn't cover it up. If you're an angry woman, plain clothing doesn't cover it. It's a heart problem. God asked Jonah a hard question, and if we're dealing with an anger issue right now, God would ask us the question, doest thou well to be angry? Doest thou well to be angry? God asked Jonah that. Could you hear God saying that to you and I tonight? Proverb writer says, he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated. He that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly. Be not hasty in the spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Wrath is cruel, and anger is outrageous. But who can stand before envy? We need to ask God to help us control our anger before anger totally controls us. Anger can take us to places we would never have imagined and has great potential to isolate us from those we depend on and need the most. This father that I was telling about, when he scolded his son and the son walked out of the shop crying, he has begged his son to come back and work at my shop. I need help. Come back and work. And his son says, okay, Dad, I'm going to try. And I'm telling you, it happens I don't know how many times. It lasts about 2 or 3 months and the sparks are flying and it's hard words again. And he just goes on and works for somebody else. Some time ago, I heard a testimony. Dad says, I just don't know why. I just don't know why. The children just all want to be away. As an example of what anger can do to us, and this is probably an extreme example, but it goes to show what anger can do, I invite us for a little tour through the book of 1 Samuel. We're starting now in chapter 11. The person in focus is King Saul, the first king of Israel, a man who was head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd, a big man. But we will see what happened and what anger cost him. What does my anger cost me? What does your anger cost you? What does anger cost? That's our subject tonight. 1 Samuel chapter 11, and we're looking at verse 5. Some people came to Gibeah, where Saul was, and there was people there with him. And behold, Saul, I'm in 1 Samuel 11:5, came after the herd out of the field, and Saul said, what aileth the people that they weep? And they told him the tidings of the men of Jabesh. And the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard these tidings, and his anger was kindled greatly. And he took a yoke of oxen and hewed them in pieces and sent them throughout all the coasts of Israel by the hand of messengers, saying, whosoever cometh not forth after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done unto his oxen. And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent. Now, if somebody comes and tells you that if you don't show up at a certain place, that any cattle that you own are going to be cut to pieces, I think you would probably move pretty fast, wouldn't you? And it says here the Spirit of God came upon Saul, and his anger was kindled. Maybe in that case, he kept himself under control. However, let's keep reading. Now we're down in verse 12 of the same chapter. And the people said unto Samuel, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death. And Saul said, there shall not a man be put to death this day, for today the Lord hath wrought salvation in Israel. But is that the way Saul's life remained? Or did things change? We will soon see. If you go over to chapter 13, you find out that he forced himself. He forced himself to sacrifice the sacrifice that Samuel should have offered. Saul was not allowed to do it, and he should not have done it. And Samuel shows up just as he gets done, and he said he forced himself because he saw the people were scattering from him, and the Philistines were upon him, and he needed to do something. Now we're over in chapter 14, verse 43. And Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die. And Saul answered, God do so to me and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. And the people said unto Saul, shall Jonathan die who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day So the people rescued Jonathan that he died not. Do we notice any change? Do we notice anything different? Chapter 15, verse 22. And Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as idolatry, iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he also hath rejected thee from being king." And then Saul wanted to quickly make some amends there. And honor me now in the sight of the people. And a person that's having this kind of issues wants to keep the public image right. They don't want to let anyone find out. And that's only part of the story. And then we know what happened in chapter 17, the famous story about David and Goliath and the happenings there. We see the attitude that Jonathan had toward David. And Jonathan was actually, by lineage, he would have been the rightful heir to the throne. We know that. But we also know that God had other plans in mind, and that Samuel had already anointed David to be the next king. And we contrast the attitude that Jonathan had toward David and the attitude that Saul had toward David. It was a world of difference between the two. And Jonathan should have had similar attitudes, or could have had similar attitudes to those of Saul, his father. But he had a different attitude about it. I don't know what kind of spirit Jonathan had. But now we're in chapter 18. And you're aware of how it was said that Saul slayed his thousands and David his 10,000s. And of course, Saul became all the more jealous. And now we're here in 1 Samuel 18, verse 7. And the women answered one another as they played and said, "Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth. And the saying displeased him. And he said, "They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom?" And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. It came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, "I will smite David even to the wall with it." And David avoided out of his presence twice. What is happening to our dear friend Saul? What is happening here? Chapter 19 and verse 8. And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and slew them with a great slaughter, and they fled from him. And the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul, and he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away out of the presence of Saul, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. And as a result of that account, he sent soldiers or men to kill David at his own house where Saul's own daughter Michal lived. Can you imagine such a thing? Sending someone out to kill your son-in-law? What in the world? How bad can anger get? Your own daughter's husband. And that's what Saul did. He sent people to kill David at his own house where his daughter Michal lived. And other details unfold. Things, this story doesn't get better. It only gets worse. Now we're in chapter 20 and we're in verse 30. And Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, "Thou son of the perverse, rebellious woman, do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion and unto the confusion of thy mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established nor thy kingdom. Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die." And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said unto him, "Wherefore shall he be slain? What hath he done?" And Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and did eat no meat the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had done him shame. So here we see it. Not only now is Saul angry with David, but he's angry with his own son. And imagine you taking that javelin and throwing it and trying to kill your own son. How bad can this get? And then in chapter 22, we know the stories of how David was chased like a wild animal through the hills. And then in chapter 22, the priest of Nob over there, Ahimelech, I think it was, the priest, David goes and asks him for a little bit of food. And he stayed over there for a little while. Ahimelech, the priest, yeah, he goes and asks him, and the priest gives him some bread. And he also gives him Goliath's sword. He said, just take it, have it. And Doeg, the Edomite's over there. And Doeg, the Edomite, says, Saul says, who in this army is in favor of me? And who's in favor of that guy out there? Who's in favor of that David? And Doeg says, I saw a priest over that way. And he gave him some bread. And he gave him a sword. And do you know what happened? Saul said, go after him. And they killed 85 priests that wear a linen ephod. I mean, killing 85 men of God. People that were ordained of God to do the work. Where will anger take a person? How much does anger cost? And not only that, but he took out that whole city. That is in verses 18 and 19 of chapter 22. And the king said to Doeg, turn thou and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned and he fell upon the priests and slew on that day 85 persons. That's 85 people that did wear a linen ephod. And Nob, the city of the priest, he smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women and children and sucklings and oxen and asses and sheep with the edge of the sword. And how much bloodshed and carnage. Can you imagine walking into that city and seeing dead people and dead animals lying everywhere? And why? Because of the wrath of a silly king. And how much does anger cost you and I? Do you know what I'm talking about tonight? This story continues to unfold until finally Saul is so desperate that he solicits the help of a witch to find some kind of consolation, some kind of direction. Saul is now dead. I'm sorry, Samuel's now dead, and he tries to bring him back from the, however they do that, by divinations and so on. And finally, if you get to chapter 31, we see there that Saul, in all probability, committed suicide. That's how bad it got. But what does your anger and mine cost tonight? What is the cost of anger? How much will we pay for anger? I highly admire Jonathan in this unfolding story. But I want to tell us something. Even in Jonathan, we see that anger begets anger. If anger does not dealt with in one generation, it carries right on into the next unless something seriously changes in the life of a person. And that's one of my great burdens tonight. What happens if anger is never taken care of? I said before this evening that we need to ask God to help us control our anger before anger totally controls us. Anger can take us to places where we would never have imagined and has great potential to isolate us from those we depend on and need the most. Now, it's easy for some people to attribute angry situations and angry people to the masculine gender. But the book of Proverbs, for some reason, says a verse like this. It is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. So it's also a potential possibility for the feminine gender as well. It says in the book of Proverbs also that an angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgressions. Did you ever think about that? Whenever there's anger present in someone's life, the multitude of sins that builds around that, the hypocrisy that's in some people's lives, the potential for more and more sin grows and grows. It says an angry person abounds in transgression. Now we would like to see what Jesus specifically says about anger, and I invite you now to Matthew chapter 5. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar. Go thy way, first be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the council, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto you, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. How much does anger cost? How much does anger cost? Some versions omit the phrase, being angry with your brother without a cause. But I would just like to ask us this evening if we could potentially change a word there just for the sake of this message tonight. I would just like, is there anything like being angry with your wife without a cause? Possible to be angry with your husband? Is it possible that you could be angry with your children? Is it could be possible that you could be angry with your work associates? Is it possible that you could be angry with your classmates? Is it possible that you as a school teacher could be angry with your school children? I'm going to tell you a story that happened in a setting plainer than anyone sitting here. There was this school teacher that noticed among some teenage girls in his classroom that there was a little click going on. You know what clicks are? You have an idea? He noticed this little click. So he decided, I'm going to whoop this problem real easy. He says, you two girls aren't allowed to talk to each other for a week. He sat down on a Monday morning, and he watched them at recess time, and he just kept his eye on them two girls. And we're going to crack this click up. You better watch it. Yes, sirree, we're going to take care of this click. This is going to stop. So what happened? Evidently, they behaved themselves quite well, but on Sunday morning, he caught them. Caught them on Sunday morning. After church, he saw him talking. Aha! He waited till Monday morning. He says, girls, I said you may not talk to each other for a week. He said, and I don't know the details, but I do know that that girl got a severe beating. Severe. Her dad told me the story. And it is any wonder that that girl today is not nearly as plain as what her parents would like her to be. Is it any wonder at all? Anger begets anger sometimes. And sometimes the relationships get so broken down, and the child, the young person, can associate plainness with austerity. My friends, I'm telling you, this kind of stuff is serious. It's serious. What does Raca mean? An expression of contempt, meaning worthless, foolish, and empty. It is almost unreal the way some people talk about or to somebody when they are angry with them. How you talk about somebody when you're angry and how you talk to somebody when you're angry. And it's unreal. It's unreal. For some reason, God says here, Jesus teaching us, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. And what about if my brethren know that I'm an angry person, and I will talk behind their back? The Bible talks about backbiting. Did that ever happen to you? Does that feel good? That's a result of someone that has problems controlling their spirit and their tongue. because there's a close connection between an angry heart and an angry tongue. Angry words can flow out of an angry heart. This is serious stuff that we're talking about. The Apostle John in 1 John chapter 3 speaks very plainly about this. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hates you. We know that we have passed from death unto life because we love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. And if you don't love, what do you do? Tell me. If we don't love, what do we do? Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. And ye know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? Little children, brothers and sisters, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Because anger costs so, so much. It's good to say some things that I love you. It's good to act it out some. But if it's word and in tongue only, but not in deed and in truth, it's very empty. The Bible teaches us, and I already read it back there in Matthew 5, agree with thine adversary quickly. I heard a story one time about a man who spent some of his younger years in a plain conservative church. And sometime later, because of experiences in his life, he became a local police sheriff. And he knew the members of the church good and well. He knew them, and he knew them well. And the story came to my ears, and this might be slightly twisted, because when a story goes from one person to another, by the time it's third hand, it might be slightly exaggerated, okay? So I'm just going to say it as I heard it. But the officer that spent time in this plain church and later was a police officer pulled off one of the members who was about my age at that time, still is, I guess, pulled him over for speeding or for some traffic violation. And the fellow looks out at him and says, "Guy, I'm kind of surprised that you decide to pull me over. Who do you think you are?" And with that, left rubber lying on the road as he took off. Agree with thine adversary quickly. Angry words, spinning of tires. The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. It just doesn't, my friends. It just doesn't. From my short years of observation, it seems as though some churches deal very quickly with sins of the flesh. Oh, if we find somebody was involved in fornication or adultery or something like that, boy, I mean, the axe comes down quick. Excommunication, quick and done. But could I submit to us tonight the potential possibility, it seems to me, that sometimes sins of the spirit, like anger, have cost the church at least as many casualties, if not more. And I say that with all sincerity. And I say that with a heavy burden on my heart tonight. The question tonight is, what will we do if we're struggling with anger issues? Proverbs 19:11 says, "The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression." Proverbs 16:32, "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city." Jesus in Luke 9:55 told his disciples, "Ye know not what manner of spirit you're of." Why did he say that? Because they thought that Jesus' presence was being somewhat shoved aside from that Samaritan town. And the disciples looked at Jesus and said, "Should we call fire down from heaven and consume them people like Elijah did?" And Jesus said, "Disciples, you don't know what manner of spirit you're of. For the Son of Man came not to destroy men's lives, but to save them." Do you remember it says over in Romans chapter 8, I think I've referred to this before this week, if any man have not the Spirit of Christ, he is none of his. Would Jesus get angry in the kind of ways that I've described tonight? One of the biggest problems about anger is the victims of anger. Several weeks ago, our phone rang, and a lady was on the other end of the line, and she wanted to talk to my wife a while. And she told story after story after story. And some of the stories I scarcely want to believe because they sound so horrible, about her angry husband and what's happening in their home. And what is a victim of anger supposed to do? What is a Jonathan supposed to do when Saul is the kind of man that he is? What is a victim of anger supposed to do? I know of a teenager that sat down with another teenager who she thought she could confide in. They sat down at a restaurant one evening because she wanted to talk. She had to talk. She needed to say something. She wanted to share. And she said, "You wouldn't believe how it is at our house." And she spewed out story after story after story of what it's like to live in a home where mom and dad don't get along and where dad just is a brutal somebody. And please don't tell my preachers. And I'm puzzling still to know what to do with that because I heard about it. I would like to offer help to any victims of anger tonight. I would like to reach out to any dad or any mom or any employer, any young person that's having this kind of struggles. I'd like to reach out to you tonight. I'd like to give you the invitation of Jesus. What will our anger cost? Number one, it'll cost us our relationship with our family. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, lest they be discouraged. In Spanish, it's para que no se desalientan, which means that they doesn't take the wind out of them. If you just scold a child and correct a child and in anger do it, one day after another, after a while, they'll feel like they're a worthless who knows what. No different than Reka in Matthew chapter 5. Worthless and good for nothing somebody. It'll cost us our relationship with our family. It'll cost us our respect. How many of you respect an angry person? It will cost us our relationships where we work, wherever that is. People we associate with are going, "Well, you got to watch that guy. You just never know when he's going to be," in Spanish we use the word "in bad coffee" today. You never know. Just watch him. Watch her. You never can tell. It'll cost us our relationship with the church. Often has. Because oftentimes anger begets anger and more sin. And a person that is given to anger abounds in transgression. And after a while, the sins of the flesh, sins of the spirit become sins of the flesh. And oftentimes then it's dealt with. But where did it start? What was the root? It'll cost us, number five, our relationship with God. And worst of all and most of all, anger can keep us out of heaven. I just want to read a few verses yet from Ephesians. Chapter 4. "Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be ye angry and sin not." And that right there is a big job. That is a big job. "Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Let all bitterness," I'm in verse 31, "wrath, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. The Lord is gracious and full of compassion, slow to anger, and of great mercy." if you, this message tonight means anything to you, if this message tonight describes your condition, if you are an angry person tonight, please don't wait till midnight to take care of it. If you're a victim of anger tonight, please reach out for help before this night's over. I plead with you. Let's bow our heads for prayer.